to be Saturday?
What day is it today?
Wednesday.
Exactly.
Welcome to Film Fight Club. I'm Glenn Falconstein from Falcon Screen, and we are joined by Sydney filmmaker Chris Evans.
Greetings, folks.
And freelance writer and critic Virat Nehru.
Hello, hello. Welcome to the new world.
It is indeed the new world. We're not talking about the Terrence Malick film again, just getting the references right out of the way, because we didn't cover this last week because we did pre-record, but the big news of the weekend, of course, the Wallabies won. The Wallabies won. It's amazing. They beat New Zealand. Very ugly game. A few red cards, no. We are talking, of course, about Johnny Depp going off the Fantastic Beasts franchise. We actually are talking about that later in the episode. We're talking about Donald Trump. Wow, it happened. He hasn't conceded, notably, but Georgia, Pennsylvania has been called.
But have you considered that maybe Trump is actually still the president if we throw out all the illegal votes?
He definitely is. Well,
yeah,
all the
exactly.
Millions
all
and
the,
millions.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All the fraudulent activity.
From all those blue states.
Yeah.
California.
If the election was so extremely thrown by fraud, why were the Democrats completely unable to make any leads in the houses?
No, I love the line I'm still listening to Stephen Colbert, that if Joe Biden and the Democrats are able to coordinate something on that scale across so many states, this is the sort of person you would want leading the country in the midst of a global pandemic.
I mean, I'm just sad that we're missing the opportunity to say to Trump, you're fired.
No, everyone's done that. The internet was ready with their you're fired gifs. The reason we're talking about Donald Trump is that before becoming president, he sadly was a movie star. He's been in a few films that we otherwise love. Surprise, surprise, city film critics just don't like Donald Trump. Home Alone 2, Zoolander, others I don't like Money Never Sleeps, 2 Weeks
These
Notice.
These are actually, I think, great movies. I don't know what you're talking
Money
about.
Money Never Sleeps is not a good movie, man.
I never saw that.
It's bad. It's very
That's
bad.
That's a fight we should have.
Really?
I think it's a good movie.
Really? Okay.
The entire final act wasn't necessary. Anyway, we're going to be talking about Donald Trump movies a little bit later in the program.
Hold on. Donald Trump is in that movie?
He has a scene with Gordon Gekko in a barber, and he actually has to act, and he's not a good actor.
Oh,
so it's really quite lousy.
I wonder how Oliver Stone feels about that now.
Probably very bad, as do, I'm guessing, all the people who had him on Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, The Nanny. How does Ben Stiller feel about this now? They can't be happy with him being a Zoolander.
Yeah, I think all the people who propped him up have some reservations, to put it mildly.
Yeah, we're talking about you, Jimmy Fallon.
So, no, I was fine. I know what you're talking about. The Jimmy Fallon interview was fine. Also, later in the program, we were talking about the British Film Festival, which opens this week, Summerland and Ammonite, which I myself and Virat have respectively seen. But I'll also be touching on The Rocks, which is on Apple TV now, a film we reviewed earlier last month. We're talking about some news of the week and, all things Donald Trump. Before we get into that, we want to talk about things that are happening about town. Move in Bed is continuing until this weekend, as is Sydney Open Air Cinemas. The British Film Festival starts today. It started yesterday, we are pre-recording this, excuse me. And that's playing at Palace Cinemas. The Russian Resurrection Film Festival is happening from this weekend. Kino Sydney is having their 155th screening online on Thursday night. Fantastic Friday is continuing at the Fantastic Film Festival Australia at the Ritz Randwick.
They're showing The Trouble with Being Born.
Yes, they are, which we discussed briefly earlier in the year, which screened at the Melbourne International Film Festival.
I think it's already screened at the Ritz, actually. Trouble with Being Born, yeah.
Yes, it has. Mm. And the Irish Film Festival Australia, which will be a little more coverage in the coming weeks, will kick off online from next week. In addition to that news, there's actually been quite a few things that happened this week. We touched a moment ago on the other big film news of the week, Johnny Depp resigning. It must be said he stepped away officially from the Fantastic Beasts franchise.
Although, as he said in his press release, he was asked to resign.
I love how direct he was about it. Usually it's like, I decided this is the right time for you to step back. It's like, no.
Taking responsibility.
I'm out. I never actually saw the second one in its entirety. I don't know why people care about the Fantastic Beasts franchise right now.
I heard that it was very bad.
The parts I saw were spectacularly bad. The first one wasn't a good movie either.
That's the thing. Everyone's like, the first one was good, but the second one was really bad. And I think, how bad does that mean the second one is? The thing that I think really sunk the first one for me was just how digital it looked. That was a film that was really crying out for the charm and the physicality of real sets, but the entire film felt like it was shot on a green screen. And for that old world English charm kind of feeling.
Too many stories were going into it. Also, Colin Farrell, you're incredible, and you could have done so much more with him.
I think that reveal of Colin Farrell then turning into Johnny Depp is one of my most heartbreaking things. I'm like, oh, a great actor now turning into a mediocre actor.
Well, that's the thing. I think Johnny Depp is a great actor. It's just that he doesn't do great work anymore. It's
been a long time. I'd say the last good film he did as a terms of performance piece would be... Are we going back? Sweeney Todd was good.
Yeah.
Tim Burton, he needs to get back to like...
Maybe.
But and Tim Burton both probably needs need
Johnny
other.
Depp as well.
I think so, yeah. They both need to be but,
well, they just both experiment a little bit more, as Johnny Depp and Tim Burton used to do the better part of their careers.
I remember people cracking jokes about how much of a disappointment it was when Colin Farrell transformed into Johnny Depp at the end of the first one.
Yeah.
And I've seen people saying, can we have the new one open with him turning back into Colin Farrell?
That would be great. It's like, surprise, I'm here.
CG Johnny Depp.
but there is a way that can happen because of how... he basically transformed into Johnny Depp. The character has the ability to change appearance, so a new actor can portray and reprise the role. But so the franchise can still live on.
There's endless amounts of Polyjuice potion. That's all you need. Characters did it in the Harry Potter universe for certainly the David Tennant character, Buddy Crouch Jr. Sorry for spoilers for the fourth book. I'm sure you read it. This is obviously Glenn Falconstein, Chris Evans, and Virat Nehru on film Fight Club on 2SER. The other news of the week is that Memories of Murder, which Chris saw today, is also screening for the last time at Dendy Newtown tonight, 9 p.m. So you can catch it right after the show.
Yeah, I would say that if you've got no plans, go and catch that. It's such a great film. Bong Joon-ho was in incredible form already with his second film. It's good, great to see it on big screen. The last time I saw this was on a tiny TV screen in 2007, and it deserves the big canvas. Lots of big wide shots.
Memories of Murder, then Ghost, and which is the third one? Like, he was on a...
The Host, you mean?
No. Sorry. Yeah.
Ghost was very Patrick Swayze.
Yeah, Ghost was very different. But no, he has basically never stepped off his incredible run. I would argue Okja is the only slight misstep, and that's still a good movie.
I thought it's definitely as a Netflix film, I think it's still one of the most daring Netflix
that's
films.
That's true, it is.
There on that platform.
For sure, yeah.
Another bit of film news, we've always covered what is happening in and around town and streaming and screening. We've talked about the pitfalls potentially of having a film festival online, notably KOFIA, the Korean Film Festival in Australia, which was running, has stopped their online presence, been postponed till later on. And there was an issue with their platform. Obviously, there was, as they noted on Facebook, that there was no compromises of anyone's personal accounts. But as the state is that the festival can't continue, which is very frustrating, very sad. Certainly, there's something that could happen and has happened to this festival, but obviously festivals are going ahead and screening online, as we know, to the Irish Film Festival, the inaugural Sydney Science Fiction Film Festival is happening as of next week. We'll be having Simon, who the festival founder, on next week's show. And yeah, but with the exception of KOFIA, it seems that all the festivals have continued to please and go off and have a lot of great presence and traction online.
I'm very anxious. A lot of sleepless nights to put together the Sydney Science Fiction Film Festival. So hopefully that goes without a hitch and then I can sleep again.
Yes, Farad is involved, actually. Yes, I'm not sure if we've officially said that on the show before.
I'm not sure either. But yep, it's exciting things to be involved in and I'm looking forward to seeing that. I know that's actually happening in person, though.
Yes, so it's an interesting choice. We'll discuss more about that next week with Simon.
Sure.
See what the reasons behind that were.
With regard to the...
And just to note on KOFIA, obviously that KOFIA has been running strong for 11, 12 years and until this little glitch was also doing very well online.
That's right. I'm surprised that this sort of thing hasn't happened earlier, to be honest. Because...
Me too.
Yeah, online security is so difficult anyway and... Some real damage can be done just by breaking into these film festivals. I would be surprised if this does not happen to one of the major film festivals, if they have to stream online again.
It's happened. So I know The Disciple that screened at Venice and TIFF and then the New York Indian Film Festival got leaked. So that was one of the films that's one of the bigger Venice. It won at Venice as the best screenplay. So that definitely got leaked. So
because of the New York Indian Film Festival?
I think so, yes. I think that's already happened. That's one of the bigger ones.
It's a scary
casualties world
for film distribution going forward in a lot of ways.
Yeah, to be clear, we're not speaking exactly what has happened in any particular circumstance, including KOFIA. We're just noting that they made a statement to the effect of that they could not continue to proceed with the online platform in this current festival run. Now, furthermore, speaking of COVID-related news. We covered a couple of weeks ago the first, we'd argue, big post-COVID film, a film directly referencing the pandemic and its fallout, Borat 2, subsequent movie film. The new Michael Bay film, Michael Bay's producer, Songbird, has just released a trailer with KJ Apa and quite a few stars. It's significant that this was clearly filmed amidst COVID restrictions and a lot of actors and characters in isolated environments, clearly away from each other. They were trained specially to operate different equipment and work within these restrictions. I would be surprised if many of the actors from the trailer actually interacted directly with each other. It seems very apparent. And that the trailer's out, it's going to be very interesting to see. Certainly a lot of films now, including Children of the Corn, which is from New South Wales and apparently is out in a few theatres in the US, though hasn't been released elsewhere. Yeah, apparently you can see it. Has been shot with these sort of restrictions. I haven't seen new episodes of Neighbours, but Neighbours has been done the same sort of thing. So we'll see Songbird and we'll report on that once we get an opportunity to see it. But yeah, there's a few theatres in the US that apparently have got an opportunity and it wasn't advertised. They just people just went in and saw, what's this, Children of the Corn? Sure, I'll go see it.
Weird. I think, yeah.
Probably live test audiences. I mean, imagine if one critic had walked by and, oh, excuse me a few minutes, I'm just going to get the scoop on this one.
It's kind of low stakes, you know, just putting a film out in American theaters right now, even especially if you do a limited release when barely anyone's going and barely any theaters are open.
I mean, Tenet is out in Victoria IMAX Melbourne.
Finally.
So, yeah, finally. So, hopefully. And I know it didn't do well in the US, but in Australia it did pretty well.
It did pretty well most places. It's just that pretty well wasn't good enough, especially when the US brings in basically nothing.
Yeah, that's
such a major market for blockbusters.
So you're listening to Film Fight with Glenn Falconstein, Chris Evans, and Vratni Ron to SER. So that is the other big news of this week.
I have one more thing to say about Songbird.
Sure.
Which is why. It's not my original take, but I've seen some people make the very astute point that right now I don't think people actually want to see content, entertainment, about the pandemic.
Material.
Yeah, exactly.
Agreed.
About especially cheaply, shoddily thrown together, very evidently cash grab material as this seems to be.
We're still in it. And we may be for a long time. People aren't ready for it. In the same way that the Brendan Gleeson series about Trump, why wasn't that released 2 months ago? No one's going to care now.
Yeah.
I don't see a market for it.
It's true. But I think people are really trying to get away. There's from pandemic-related stuff. There's a point when there'll be a cathartic impact to this kind of material, but I think people will want something that's been very considered and very thoughtfully and deliberately made and not what this seems to be.
And remember, a film like The Post, which we noted a couple of years ago, was probably the first real post-Trump film. Obviously, it's set in the 1970s, but it is more than implicitly directs Trump. It was released a couple of years after his election.
Yeah.
Spielberg timed it right.
It took some time. It was about defending the media at a time when they were constantly being, I would say, slandered. Not to say that there's no room for legitimate criticism of the media. It is in many ways corrupt, but not how Trump puts it.
No.
No, I think, look, clearly the best critique of the media came from the James Bond film, right?
Oh, yeah, with Rupert Murdoch.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Tomorrow Never Dies.
Yeah.
Yes, Elliot Carver. I love that scene. 17 British sailors killed. No, it's not evil at all. 17 British sailors murdered.
Yeah.
Very
I love that movie.
I adore that. It's probably the James Bond film. It's not my favorite. It's the one I've seen the most of.
I would say it's the best Pierce Brosnan film.
No, GoldenEye's better, man.
The thing is that, Tomorrow Never Dies is the best Pierce Brosnan film. GoldenEye is the best Timothy Dalton James Bond.
Yes, it would have been great if Dalton. I loved Brosnan. It would have been great if Dalton had been in it.
Yeah, but Tomorrow Never Dies has the Pierce Brosnan flavor, where it's a little bit more quippy, a little bit more Roger Moore-ish, but he's not quite the clown.
Yeah, without literally it being died on the day level.
As Roger Moore became an octopussy, and that Pierce Brosnan had stepped up to being by Die Another Day. As
but it got the Brosnan balance right. However, I would argue that Brosnan, and it was only in those 2 years between GoldenEye and Tomorrow Never Dies, aged just enough that he lost some of the edginess that he had in GoldenEye, and that made the role so great, and I think still his best film.
Yeah.
And irrespective, I think it's the best scripted one. It's probably my favorite Bond film.
It's so much fun. The stunts are really good. Yeah. And the car is hilarious.
The car's great.
Tomorrow Never Dies.
Oh, yeah. with the remote control. smashing into the Avis.
Yeah, absolute goal.
And Michelle Yeoh, I mean, we should talk about that, given that...
Oh, she's great.
Star Trek Discovery. She's fantastic in it. I'm just watching the new episode today.
She's got probably the most amount of, like, action sequences for a Bond girl for, you know...
Because she's capable. Because she comes from Hong Kong cinema and knows...
Which is why I was also glad that they gave her the opportunity to actually display her skills properly.
Her and, I think, the lead actress in Yuen Lip Twice, who unfortunately had a run around in the bikini in the crater, which was absurd. But Michelle Yeoh was great in Tomorrow Never Dies.
Last thought from me on Tomorrow Never Dies. Bond is so off-puttingly psychopathic when he throws the guy into the newspaper. Drill. There's a few things, but I was thinking of the newspaper.
They'll read it.
It's amazing. They'll print anything these days or whatever. It's just like...
Yeah. I love to see what the character actor is. Like, I'm just professional doing my job. Me too. Yeah, they show that this guy is a blank... assassin.
Yeah, that was good.
And you know what? The relationship with Paris Carver, it felt more real than almost any other romance in the entirety of the series. The other one on par with that would be on Manchester Secret Service with Diana Rigg. Anyway, we kind of got off track a little. Just while we're on the post, actually, I recorded last night Blake Howard following as part of One Heat Minute Productions, following the conclusion of One Heat Minute with Michael Mann, is doing All the President's Minutes, which is every minute talking about of All the President's Men and using it to talk about the filmography of Alan Pakula, Robert Redford, Dustin Hoffman, but also what is going on in the world of politics. I recorded with him last night. It was right after we learnt about Donald Trump being defeated and Biden winning.
How many episodes? So you're the guest. How many episodes in?
I'm on at minute 119. So it's that great scene where it's like, we need more sources. 20 minutes to print. We have to go, go, go. And it's I watched the film over the years. I've read the book. It was nice to revisit it yesterday and talk about my favorite film, Sneakers, tangentially, because Robert Redford is also the star of All the President's Men. So that might be up by the time this goes to air. I think it probably will. Otherwise, it'll be up in the coming days. But
nice.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun. So this is, we're listening to Film Fight Club on 2SER, and we thought we'd talk about the British Film Festival because it is screening at Palace Cinemas as of yesterday. The film that was part of the preview was Summerlands, from filmmaker Jessica Swale. She had a short for the BBC, Leading Lady Parts, starring a number of prominent actresses, which went viral a few years ago. Absolutely fantastic. And this is starring Gemma Arterton and Gugu Bartha-Raw. It is set during the Second World War on the English coast, where a reclusive writer played by Arterton is caused to bring into a home one of the child evacuees from London during the Blitz. I know this sounds like Bedknobs and Broomsticks, a great film that I loved from my childhood and still love. It's not that. It is a drama. There are romantic elements to it.
Can't we have animated dragons and stuff?
There were no animated dragons in...
I'm thinking of Pete's Dragon, the original. No, they were... Crossing it with Bedknobs and Broomsticks.
You're thinking of the Boom Boo, where there was the Lion King and a lot of other... just Dracuna, McCoy's, Quorum City. Anyway, let's talk about this film. This has a few very predictable elements to it, but it's smart enough that the predictable elements know that they are that and are used to mask much more interesting twists, which I respect as integrity in the storytelling, which not a lot of films have. The film is charming enough. At the center of the film and the title there is a metaphor. I didn't mind the metaphor. Fortunately, this narrative device is incredibly overwrought, and as it was, it's a little tired, certainly in this case. The actors are very good. I have, however, an unusual criticism of this film. This is a romance which is played out in the cinematic language of 90s and earlier films, where, and importantly, a queer romance, and where this is of the time when filmmakers were very guarded, given how they perceived audiences and how people generally received sorts of these films and how they depicted these sorts of romances. I'm talking about specifically not depicting physical interactions, physical intimacy explicitly. I know a lot of films, either filmmakers, irrespective of different cultural trends, choose to either depict physical intimacy, however, to whatever degree, explicitly, implicitly, for the purposes of their story, whether it's to make it accessible to different audiences, different ages, or just because they view emotional intimacy as more consequential than physical intimacy. I think if you're going to... this film made the decision to depict physical intimacy implicitly and in a manner that evokes those earlier stories. I think if you're going to do that, either you have to do it implicitly in a manner that is palpable or focus on the emotional elements thereof. And if you're going to depict a physical intimacy explicitly, implicitly, it has to, it can be easier to convey that through showing it. Or otherwise, a lot of filmmakers can pull off showing it implicitly but still have it being emphatic. I don't think this filmmaker did. And I think that's the film's detraction. Otherwise, I thought it was a good film. I just think this was a major part that was aboundingly distracting.
Do you think this narrative just needed the physical intimacy?
No, absolutely not. But I think the core part of it that was engaging to me was the emotional part of it. The physical elements were an element thereof. However, if you're going to draw such attention to it and the consequence of physical intimacy, either you have to show it or you have to render the implicit parts as palpable, as engaging. And it was just those moments of, we're going to cut away here and show, instead of showing something, show someone looking. There was too many shots of someone looking forlornly out over the cliff. And we've seen that cinematic language before. It's tired, and it doesn't, not only is it tired now, it doesn't need to be used now. And I found that the film's disappointing to some degree.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah. So that is Summerland. It is screening at the British Film Festival, as is Ammonite.
Yes, Ammonite, the other queer romance featuring loners. It seems to be quite a trend now. It seems to be like queer romances now just feature writers or loners in general who need some kind of company.
The metaphor for being isolated and shut off in your own thoughts, but I can find release
almost literally in this case it seems to be, you know. And so Ammonite is following the character of Mary, I can't pronounce the last name, but she's a paleontologist, that's a tongue twister or two,
paleontologist like Ross,
there you go. Yes, paleontologist like Ross, yeah. But definitely a better character than Ross was in Friends. Yeah,
Friends was very overrated. Sorry, let's talk about this movie.
Yes. Basically a loner whose life changes dramatically when Saoirse Ronan's character enters her life. It's directed and screenplay is written by Frances Lee.
The main made God's Own Country.
Yes. The problem with this film is that it is so just godforsakenly bland. It's so British. I mean, if there is a criticism for a film being too British, I think this is it, because right. There is a stoic sensibility to the film and the shots. I mean, this is exactly the kind of film that would be screening at British Film Festival.
It's funny. I had seen this film hyped up a bit, and earlier today, before catching one of the last screenings of Memories of Murder, I saw the trailer for this, and I, you know, with my girlfriend who I saw it with, I said, hold on, is it just me or does this look bad? It looks real. It does look
bland.
I have
heard that, yeah.
It looks like art house cliches stacked on top of each other. It also looked very similar to Portrait of a Lady on Fire in some ways.
They're definitely aping that, especially with the 1840s aesthetic, you know.
And all the beach, the Jane Campion piano-esque yes. beach scenes and people running around in dresses and, you know.
But the problem is, there is none of that Sciamma's particular eye and vision for how the framing needs to be done. The framing is flat. Mm. The actors have no chemistry with each other. I couldn't buy into the romance. Kate Winslet has done a better loner performance, something like The Reader, with a lot more significance and weightage. Here she's just going through the motions. And also, this film was just not needed. Like, honestly, it just was riding high on all the previous queer romances that seem to be happening. This seems to be like, okay, fine, we can do one because here's this another. Is now yeah. the kind of, you know, success in the hour.
Art house niche.
It strikes me, just listening to your criticism, that there is different but still similar issues with Summerland, in that they're trying to evoke 1940s cinema, 1940s sweeping romances, but it's either bland or reserved. And I keep bringing back to a great masterpiece of British cinema, Brief Encounter by David Lean from 1946, where you see two characters who can't interact that much, both because of the filmmaking of the time, what was restricted and acceptable to audiences generally, but also the nature of the romance. But it was beautiful,
because it worked. Yeah, the characters are built around that. But
the Portrait comparison is interesting, because in Portrait there was a specific reason why the characters could not realize their romance, and that was built up in a tension dramatic tension.
Whereas
here, there is no reason for that.
Right.
Like, it literally is just, oh, because we can't.
Just a little side note complaint. Seems like everything in the art house is so reserved these days. And I get it. The world is loud. The media landscape is loud. Art house filmmakers feel like they have to offer an alternative. But wouldn't it be great to see some kind of alternative cinema that's pushing the boundaries of how film can be loud and fast? You know, it doesn't loud and fast doesn't have to be just reality TV. There's ways we can experiment with the form with that. But it seems like no one's interested in financing that.
Adam Driver did it. And Baumbach too did it at the final scene of Marriage Story.
That's true.
Great effect. But it's few and far between.
Yeah. I would say Detention and what was it called? Bodied. Would be another example of someone pushing speed instead.
The cynic in me would probably say that this is the worst kind of cash grab opportunity. It's ticking all the boxes of what's in right now. Queer romances seem to be doing well. You know, this is the aesthetic and the need of the hour. Allyship. So it needs to be, you know, we have dime a dozen of these stories now coming through.
I'm glad these stories are being told.
Yeah, I am. But at the same time, you get two A-list actors which have huge fan following. They have got nothing to do. There's no actual substance that you're trying to explore except the fact that you have got these A-list actors and you can do it.
Mm.
You know, there's no other reason for it.
Yeah. So in our final few minutes, and that's all it deserves, we want to talk about the filmography of Donald Trump, because it's the last time we're going to talk about this actor, because he's just had his final role.
I would say his final role of the guy who the president was stolen from the presidency is continuing, and probably he'll be continuing to play that role with middling success for quite some time.
Yeah, we want to stress that we're recording this on Monday night. We don't know what's going to happen by Wednesday, and certainly in the coming weeks and months prior to January 20th. Yeah, under my first introduction to Donald Trump, it actually was The Little Rascals.
I haven't seen that movie in a very long time, so I can't remember that Donald Trump was in it.
He had that scene where he's like, the son calls him the rich son. He's like, you're the best son money can buy. And then actually the kid had the better line reading of, thanks, Dad. And then I'm actually not the biggest Zoolander fan, but he did have a cameo in that. I like Zoolander. Zoolander's hilarious. I just don't get quite the cult following it has.
I think it's because it's one of the most successful really dumb movies since maybe the first Dumb and Dumber. Like, how many movies that are going for that really stupid vibe have actually been funny since? You could argue something like Talladega Nights.
Anchorman,
yeah. But Anchorman to me, Anchorman did it very well. But to me, I can watch Zoolander all the way through. Whereas I guess because he's such a sleazy character, I start to get a little bit irked by Anchorman by the end of it every time. It's a fun movie, don't get me wrong.
The flute solo was great.
Oh, yeah, hilarious.
There's a few lines that... Because Zoolander seems so much more harmless. The dumb stuff you can enjoy a lot more. I also think Anchorman's pretty overrated. The second one was terrible.
Oh, yeah, the second one was bad. It was only made, actually, so that Adam McKay could get funding for The Big Short.
Which was great, to his enormous credit. Obviously, Home Alone 2, there was the cameo in the Astoria. That was actually quite funny.
Yeah, I mean, that Kevin has no idea who this guy is. But see, Kevin is so astute and wise about so many things, but he doesn't know Donald Trump. I don't buy that.
This film's about a psychopath who traps men in his home and tortures them.
Yeah.
We never talked about Home Alone.
Oh, man. Have you guys ever seen the video online with Home Alone with Blood?
No,
it's like
someone's
wild.
Edited some of the the horrifically painful traps or whatever you want to call them in Home Alone and put in realistic injuries. It's horrifying, and I feel bad, but I laugh when I watch it because it's.
I mean, the premise itself is quite that, like, you know, they're still there to hurt the kid. So
they're there to rob the house.
Well, you know what really annoys me in Home Alone? Every time. At the end, it's like, oh, they caught him. We're going to hit Kevin with a shovel. Oh, no, that will kill him. But the bad guys can take all manner of punishment, and it's fine.
Kids, don't throw bricks at people. It's bad.
Yeah.
So, well, there's more about Donald Trump's filmography. I never saw 2 Weeks Notice. Money Never Sleeps was bad.
I saw 2 Weeks Notice. It was bad.
Okay. He was on an episode of Nanny, I remember.
Yeah. Money Never Sleeps is actually a good film. We should fight about that.
I'm happy to fight about Oliver Stone's worst film in another
week. You know,
an
Oliver Stone rundown could be really good.
Gladly. Oh, my God. I can't wait for the Trump movie he makes. It's probably going to be terrible, too.
He has a new memoir out in bookshops at the moment.
So this has been Glenn Fowkes and Chris Emmons on Right Nero on Film Fight Club. Thank you for listening. Stay tuned for Sonic Assassin, the British Film Festivals and Cinemas Now, Memories of Murders at Dendy Newtown at 9 o'clock
tonight. Great movie. Go see it.
And yeah, on the Roku screen, Apple TV, have a wonderful night. Enjoy movies. Good night.
Good night.
Did we actually...